mic on?
Not that we really need the mic.
Please no.
Okay. I actually do want to leave some time because I want to give you an opportunity that you don't always have, which is to ask real questions to a parent of a Yachad participant and a special needs child, special needs young adult. As I'm used to public speaking, and I'm used to getting up in front of an audience, I'm an interesting combination of things. I am here really as a parent of a special needs child, but someone who's not afraid to answer questions. You don't have to sugarcoat, you don't have to anything. You can ask some real questions if you want, and I'm happy to share that with you. And I think that's really what I can potentially bring to the table or to the Reuben Shul tonight, is really to speak honestly as a parent and to perhaps hear things that you don't always hear from parents, to be able to better understand what it's like to have a child with special needs in the community. I made the transition from a Yachad advisor / NCSY advisor / HASC counselor for many, many years to being a parent of a special needs child. My wife and I couldn't really have been more prepared for the birth of our child. She being an occupational therapist, me being a rabbi, both having spent many, 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 many years together and having met in Camp HASC. So really, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew what he was doing, as he always does, in terms of giving us the privilege to be the father of Matis. And it was very interesting, and I think that we have something to share as someone who sort of used to look at the parents as the parents. Those are the people on a Yachad event that you meet at the bus stop or on the bus stop in the other way, or those you meet in a camp situation on visiting day. I remember always used to seeing this mob of people sort of coming. And I remember one of the first things that I said to my wife when we went back to camp with our son, who had already been diagnosed, that, oh my God, we're the parents now. We're that group of people that shows up on visiting day. That's us now. How did we sort of get to the other side? So let me tell you a little bit. Many of you know my family a little bit, and many of you know our son Matis. None of us know what that sound is behind and I work here, and I have the slightest idea what that is, but we're going to ignore it. My wife and I were blessed with, thank God, many children very quickly. The doctor was surprised. Our fourth child in just a couple of years was Matis. And Matis developed really rather normally for the first couple of years of his life. In fact, he had a vocabulary of somewhere we don't really remember because we weren't trying to remember, between 50 and 100 words. He was quite verbal, quite friendly, and in fact, his brother, a year older than him, who many of you know, Gedalia from the Y Studs, was not the quietest child around. We actually wanted to take Gedalia for an evaluation because Matis was so advanced verbally that he was making his older brother look like he wasn't developing. So thank God today Gedalia has a fine time talking to anyone and anybody. It's not a problem. Matis, when he was about 20 months old, he got what seemed to us to be a virus. We were actually relieved at first because he was so jumpy, nothing that really looked like autism, but he was so hyperactive that it was actually a couple of days off for us. He was finally laying down for a couple of days. We stopped running after him. But when he recovered from the virus, and again, we have no way of knowing if it was the virus or not, or it was a coincidence, he started very quickly losing his language. So that in a period of a couple of months, he went from a pretty large vocabulary for a very bright 1.5-year-old to not being able to speak at all. And Matis then really did not speak till he was 5 or 6 years old. Not anything. And when he began to speak again through the use of ABA, Applied Behavioral Analysis, a very Pavlovian, almost like behavioral process, the voice that he used was a completely different voice, almost as if you'd see in a movie of someone who's possessed. and everything was there. It was almost as if the matis had sort of disappeared, and the one that came back was almost just a completely different person. Unfortunately, that's not so unusual. It's what's called regressive autism, which is, I think, the most common situation where a child develops and looks normal at first, and then somewhere between 1 and 3 years just loses all of their language and goes into their own world. And it was very interesting for my wife and I, and very difficult for us to see this happening as we continued to be staff members in HASC. I was the camp rabbi. She was an occupational therapist there. And Matis was not a camper. He was too young to be a camper. But we were sort of there in this strange world where we were staff members, but we knew that our son had the disability that many of the campers had. And we knew that that's sort of where he was heading. And it was a very, very strange experience. And I remember getting up at the end of the first summer where we sort of knew what was going on with Matis, and really speaking sort of from the other side of the podium and talking about things that I never realized as a counselor or as the camp rabbi. At that point, I think I'd been there 7 years. I mean, a long time that we had spent in this role. Our kids grew up in HASC. And sort of talking about things that I didn't realize that they couldn't have been. I guess we had done everything you could do to be a Jewish from person involved with the special needs world, and yet as a parent things were suddenly very, very different. So actually that's kind of some of the things that I want to share with you, because you have friends who do this and you've done it yourself maybe, and you've seen how incredibly rewarding and joyous it is to work with the special needs population. And what I kind of want to give you a little glimpse of is sort of, not in a bad way, I'm not building it up to something so terrible, but sort of what it's like as a parent. What it's sort of like to be on the other side, and what are some of the things that we learned, and what are some of the things that we wish you knew and that I could share with you. The first is that the parents of and the families of those with special needs children, special needs adults, are really just like you. And I know that sounds simple, but it's really true. Again, I had always viewed them as this special class of people, of the parents of my campers, and I kind of didn't realize how much they were really very much like ourselves until I realized I was in the situation with them. One of the other things I didn't realize was that while I was patting myself on the back for being with their child for 7 weeks, and it was hard, and I worked night and day, not as hard as the counselors work today. We used to goof off a lot more, but so I worked pretty hard for those 7 weeks, that they were now going home for another 45 weeks. And really, it shook me that I had never really thought about what goes on for 45 weeks of this. It meant a lot. It meant a lot of things to me. First of all, I began to ask why I never called to see if my camper wanted to come for Shabbos with me. Now, that happens a lot more today. It happened very little in the years that I was there. And I realized it just didn't occur to me that after that time, they sort of went back to real life. And I think that's something that you need to think about when you're engaged with the special needs population, is that when we're hands-on, we're very focused on them, and we love them, and they're fun, and they're great. And there are a lot of reasons. There are a lot of wonderful things about special needs individuals that make them a lot more fun to interact with than most people. And that's a whole separate speech, why people are so attached to individuals with special needs. But one of the things to think about is, what are they doing between the programs? What are they doing on an average Shabbos? It suddenly occurred to me, wow, if it was so difficult for me to take care of this individual for 7 Shabbatot, like what in the world does that mean for 45 Shabbatot in a row back home with their parents? That's a lot. And I also thought about it for really the first time from the side of the camper, of the special needs individual. The world is not really made for special needs individuals. It's just not well designed for special needs. I don't have a Taina. It's just the world is designed for everybody else. And one of the things we have to realize is that the time that we spend with special needs individuals may just be the best time of their month. May just be the best time. I mean, when my son is in camp, and the camp isn't perfect for him at this point, but, you know, it's like the time that my son is in camp, that's like the year. And then there's like the rest of the year. There's like, there are zones where individuals with special needs fit in, and then there's the rest of life when they don't. And there are places that the world makes sense to special needs individuals, and then there's like the rest of the planet that just doesn't really make so much sense to them always. And one of the things that we have to realize is how precious the time is when we're able to create spaces for them and be with them. This may just be that this is the normal time of their life. This isn't the break. This isn't the tuffel. This is the ikker. Because the reality is that it is tough being an individual with special needs in any community, and certainly within the Jewish community. And I began to realize that when I began to see them as a person who I spent a certain number of hours with, rather than the whole of their existence was when they were with me, it gave me a very different feeling. It's really important if you work with individuals with special needs to be in touch in between. They're not all so chatty. Some really are. They're not all so chatty. They're not all so interested. But it's important to them to hear from you because you might be their favorite person. You might be the person that kind of, when they see or when they're with, really takes them out of some of the boredom of being a special needs individual and some of the stresses and some of the depression of being, you know, in a difficult situation. It also does something else, and then I'm going to get into some more specifics, but it also tells the family of that individual that you really care about them and you really love being with them. And it's something I always told my son's teachers and counselors through the years. There are, just like there are, you know, socially inappropriate individuals out there and people that are off, there are also people that are off that are parents of disabled individuals. So some people are just very happy that you're now with their child and they're not. A healthy parent, a parent with good emotional intelligence, actually feels a little bad for you because they know it's not easy to be with their child and they know that it's not so simple and they actually feel a little guilty. Parents feel a little guilty sometimes when a child goes on a Yachat Shabbaton or they go to Hask because they're struggling with, am I just doing this to get some free time for myself? And wow, how are they going to take care of them? It's hard. Knowing that it's a pleasure for you is huge. Is huge. The knowing that you want to be with my child and not just that you're willing to do a chesed. You see, people don't like having chesedim done for them. Like normal. Say, there are people who are not normal. There are people who, but most people really feel a little bit of that. They don't want to be on the receiving end. They need to be. But they don't want to be. So the difference of working with a special needs child, and I assume that it's true with many children that have special needs of one sort or another, if you give the impression, or you share, if it's true, that you really love the person, that you really want to spend time with them, it means so much to the parents. Because it means now they look forward to sending the child to camp or to a Yachat Shabbaton or something like that. You feel good about it. You know that everybody's into this. I could use the little bit of time off. My son is ecstatic. And everybody working with him is happy. You know, somebody came the other night. One of his counselors came with his fiance and just picked up Matis and went to dinner. You cannot imagine how much that means to us. They didn't have to. They weren't in the area. But they wanted to. And it really makes a difference. I guess it's true in many helping fields that the attitude that you bring towards it is important. But just speaking as a parent, I could tell you that if you're excited about working with this group, It means so much to the parents. It really does. So what do we need from the community? And what does the special needs population need from you, the now and in your future roles as leaders of the community, as community members? What do we need from you? The first thing that's very helpful and very easy is to acknowledge our children, even though it's sometimes hard, even though it takes a little bit of extra effort. You know, Matis, who's now 21, is not the most chatty fellow. And in fact, it looks like he's not interested in talking to you for the most part. If you want to say good Shabbos to him, you really have to hold him for a second and kind of focus him to say good Shabbos, Matis, and he'll say good Shabbos to you. It's very easy just to look past individuals, but the first and most important step is just to acknowledge people that are in the room. And I hate to say it, it's not only those with the developmental disabilities that get overlooked at a kiddush. It's the elderly. It's sometimes older singles. It can be a lot of people who just are not the first three people that you're going to talk to at the kiddush. It means so much. We have to learn to walk into a room and notice who doesn't have anybody talking to them. And who's not there. And it's very, very simple. You cannot imagine what it means when you say good Shabbos to somebody if no one else is saying good Shabbos to them. And by the way, you can't imagine how much it means to the parents of the individual when you say good Shabbos to them. You know, one of the things I forgot to mention, I wanted to mention in the beginning, is that every situation is very different. Every child's disability is different. Every parent is different. Their temperament is different. My wife and I have it very lucky. We're community leaders. It's much easier for us to push our son in somewhere. People want to be nice to us. The rabbi and the Rebbetzin, we were the rabbi and Rebbetzin of a shul for 20 years, and Matis is growing up. But it still means a lot to us. You know that when I would never ask people in my shul, I would speak around the country and around the world, telling people, go say hi to someone at a kiddush. I wouldn't say that at my shul. I wouldn't say that. But it meant so much when I'd be standing next to Matis and someone would come up and say, good Shabbos, Matis. You know how many times people say, good Shabbos, Rabbi, and didn't say, good Shabbos, Matis? And I wasn't insulted, because Matis doesn't really care that much, and it's easy to walk past them without... But when they did, it meant a lot. And some of them were doing it just because I'm the rabbi and it's the nice thing to do, but I don't care. It didn't mean a lot less to me that they were doing it just because I was the rabbi. And it still means so much. When Matis comes for Shabbos here, it means so much when people take the time to shake Matis' hand. Everybody, I'm supposed to, part of my job on Friday night in Gluck is to stand there and just shake people's hands as they walk by. So Matis is usually with me or something, you know, so it makes a big difference when you shake Matis' hand also. So I think that's the first thing, a hello. I think our young men and women also need a place in shul, in religious life. And very often it's not that difficult to include people if we do a little bit of thought. If we try to figure out what role could they have. You know, when Matis was five, by the time he was five, he was just too difficult to run after. It was just, he's very fast. He runs marathons for Hask and for Yachad. Now it's a bracha. At the time, it's crazy. He would just run. He'd just run out of the room, and it didn't pay. Can't tell you how many times on Shabbos and Yontov we had to get in cars because he just ran out half naked and just ran. The kid runs like lightning. We couldn't catch him by foot. So he literally had to be Machal Shabbos for Sakanas Nefashis to follow him and figure out where he went. So my wife didn't come to shul for a couple of years. The Rebbetzin of the shul didn't come to shul for a couple of years. And it didn't occur to us what things we could do to get her to be back in shul. It just wasn't worth it, you know. And we were actually in the five towns, and I was speaking for a new organization called Kulanu, where my son has now been in school for many years. And after I gave this whole heart-rendering speech, Rabbi Billet got up and he spoke about a new program to have shadows during morning groups in shul. And my wife and I were the rabbi and rabbitson of the shul. If we asked the shul, they would have done that in a second. It never occurred to us that if we just got a shadow, he could suddenly be at groups. How hard was that? It just never occurred to us. And the reality is that a lot of families with children with disabilities, they don't want to impose, and they may not themselves think. But if people sit around and say, how do we include somebody here? It's often so easy. You can't make shul programming just around the disabled. If you have a child in a wheelchair who can't participate in a particular activity, you can't tell the whole shul, we're not going to have this activity at all. I don't believe that. I'm sure there's some people that would say that. That if not everyone in the shul can participate, we shouldn't have the activity. I think that's ridiculous. But 98% of the activities, everybody can participate in. It may require more staffing. It may require some advanced thought. But it can be done. And a lot of it is thought. So much of chesed is thought, not effort. To be a baal chesed is not so much how much effort you exert, but to think in a way of chesed. To think about who's in the room, to think about how people could be included. They should have a place in shul. Many of them can daven in one way or another, but someone's going to need to perhaps sit next to them. I can't believe that over one summer, someone taught my son to daven over one summer. I don't know how he did it. I wouldn't have the patience to do it. Matas can sit for 30, 40 minutes and daven. It took somebody who took the time to do that and to sit with him. So very often, again, we need to think about ways of including people that are already in our community. We shouldn't imagine that they can't have a relationship with Hashem also. One of the things that when I was the rabbi for so many years in camp, I discussed always is, you know, who knows what's going on in Shemayim? You know, we have a concept that a mitzvah va'osa is gadol from an eina mitzvah va'osa. Someone who's commanded is on a higher level. Someone who's not commanded, but I would speak about this, and I would say to the counselors, we're not in Shemayim to know what it means when a camper with cerebral palsy tries to clap his hands during Aleinu. I can't imagine that doesn't thunder in the heavens. Yes, mitzvah va'osa, eina mitzvah va'osa, but it's important for everyone to figure out how to have a relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam and to find their place. When it came time, I just want to speak briefly about it. I would speak longer and maybe another time, but when it came time for Matas' Bar Mitzvah in particular, it was a very difficult time for us. We're blessed, as I mentioned, with the kids in very short succession. And Matas' two brothers, just within 21 months, had two Bar Mitzvahs. They were very right after each other. And I was actually very depressed because I had been teaching classes already in women's seminaries about the life cycle. And one of the things I always spoke about the bar mitzvah is that it's about becoming chayiv in mitzvahs. It's not about the bar, it's about the mitzvah. And here I was with a child who halachically was not becoming chayiv in mitzvahs because of his disability. Matas is probably not a bar chiyuv. Certainly was not at the age of 13. I said, we're going to make a whole party to acknowledge the day that he would have become bar mitzvah if he wasn't a disabled individual. It was really depressing because we had just made two amazing bar mitzvahs. So my wife convinced me that we were going to focus on what Matas could do and not what Matas couldn't do. So I remember sitting with the Rav Shechter and thinking, what could he do? So we came up with a whole bunch of things over Shabbos that even Matas could do. Friday night in shul, as many of you know, there's no real obligation to make Kiddush in shul. It's a holdover from an older time. No real obligation to make that Kiddush. In Israel, they don't make that Kiddush. And no one is fulfilling their obligation with that Kiddush. So one of the things I talked about with Rav Shechter was, could my son make this Kiddush? If he could pronounce the words, could he make this Kiddush? So he said, yeah, you don't have to make the Kiddush at all. So he could make the Kiddush. So we spent months trying to teach Matas these words, and he was just mumbling and mumbling. And then somehow, the night of the Bar Mitzvah, we put him in front of him with a transliterated sheet of paper and the wine. And he just read the thing, and he read the thing in the English. He read it, and he said it loudly. Now, you've got to understand, most people in the shul had never heard him say anything. And he nailed the Kiddush. It was crazy. And everybody was getting very emotional. Now, Matas didn't understand that he brought in the Rebbe Soloveitchik as an article about when you're making Kiddush, you're bringing in the Shah. He doesn't know any of those things. Matas knew he did something good in Shul. That's what he knew. Maybe he knew he did something good in his Abba's Shul. And he just started jumping up and down. Jumping up and down, jumping up and down. And then the next day, the next morning, he came up for an aliyah with me. And he can't get the aliyah, halachically. I made the bracha, but he said it along with me. And after he got it, everybody said Mazel Tov, and he just started jumping up and down, jumping up and down. And then at Mincha, he did Galila. And he did it. He really did it. We taught him for 2 months how to do Galila, and he did Galila. And he started jumping up and down. The whole show started to dance. I spoke the next week. I said, you know, the Gemara says that Galila is much more important than we think it is. Most people, what does most people say when they get Galila? Couldn't give me an aliyah. I should have gotten an aliyah. You stuck me with Galila. What am I, the third cousin of the Baal Simcha? I said, if we knew in Shemayim what it meant to do Galila, we'd also be jumping up and down. And then he did a PowerPoint that night. All he could do for the PowerPoint to talk about Purim, it was Shabbos Zachar, was pick out the pictures. But he picked out the pictures. And it was his. The best was, I would say to Matas, okay, there was a big meal in Shushan. So I said, find the picture on Google of a meal. So he picked out spaghetti and meatballs. I don't think it was really spaghetti and meatballs. I said, and there once was a king. So I said, put in king into Google. Bless his soul, he picked a picture of Martin Luther King, which was awesome. Just awesome for the speech. He did it. I said, whatever you point to, we're going to use. He pointed to Martin Luther King. And what I realized was that, you know, if you're creative, there are lots of ways. It was probably the most meaningful bar mitzvah the shul ever saw. It was, and he's not a bar chiyuv. But they thought about how do you include him? And we felt like he created a little bit of a kesher with Hashem. The final thing is that our children need friends. They need people. Shabbos afternoon is incredibly long. And again, this comes back to where I started. The idea of thinking of individuals with special needs not as someone that's at the program that I'm at, but as people who have a life even when you're not with them and can be very bored and very difficult. Shabbos is particularly difficult. Many of them, thank God for technology, are able to use the YouTube videos, something to stay busy during the week. But Shabbos, if they try to keep Shabbos, that's a separate question. If they're trying to keep Shabbos or keep a Shabbos environment in the home, Shabbos afternoon this time of year is very, very long. So those are some of the things we need to think about. Before I conclude, I just want to say one other thing. And I know what I'm going to say now is perhaps a little bit controversial. But I'm not a believer per se in inclusion. And that's a strange thing that I'm saying after everything that I've just said. I'm not a believer per se of inclusion. I'm a believer of seeing what people's needs are and trying to meet their needs. In the world today, which is very wonderful and open-minded and liberal, the idea of inclusion is sometimes worshipped as a concept in and of itself. Why should the disabled be included? Because of inclusion. Because they should be like everyone else. Because they should have the opportunities that everybody else has. As a parent, and I believe most parents believe exactly what I do, I don't want you to include my son Matas because of inclusion. I want you to include him because it makes him happier. And it makes us happier. He doesn't need to be included in everything. And the fact is, Matas doesn't know that he's not included in certain things. I'll give you just one final example. Matas is turning 21, and he's entering the world of what do you do next? So we've been trying. Matas has some incredible visual skills and incredible computer skills. So we've been trying to get him, let's say, to figure out how to do data entry. It's amazing for someone who doesn't speak very much. He could do a certain amount of data entry. And we've been kind of priming him to one day work in a doctor's office, in a medical office. Certainly before the whole thing gets computerized, you don't need anyone to do data. We're kind of running up against this clock. And we went to see a program, because Matas is not ready to work yet. We went to see a program where the individuals spend the entire morning making lunch. for themselves and for other people. They go to the store, they pick out the foods, they have the ingredient, they make the lunch, they take out the lunch, and they eat the lunch. And I remember leaving this. My son is not going to, for whatever reason, that particular program, he's not going to go to it. I remember leaving and saying to my wife, you know, this is amazing. We've always said we want our son to be in a doctor's office. Do we want him to be in the doctor's office? Does society want him to be in a doctor's office? Or does Matis want to be in a doctor's office? Matis wants to be around food. He's skinny as anything for now. He's skinny, he's ripped, as my other sons say. The kid is ripped, but he loves to eat, he loves to jump all day long. And I said to my wife, you know, he'd rather spend all day making lunch than spending all morning in a doctor's office. Mitzad, what's right, and meeting his potential, and meeting his everything, and inclusion. So for that reason, we want him to have a job. But Matis doesn't need to have a job. What Matis needs is to feel good. Is to feel good about himself. Is to be able to be happy. Is to be able to be busy. And all of the things that we really want. None of us want a job to have a job. None of us want to be included in something to say we were included in it. We want to be included because that brings a certain amount of joy and meaning into our lives. And that's what we should be looking for the disabled as well. To look at them not as objects of our chesed. And by the way, it's hard to do chesed, and it's a great maila to do chesed. But to look at the special needs community not as objects of our chesed, but as people just like us, with needs, with wants, with desires, and things of that nature. I could take one or two questions. I'm sorry, I can't take more. Yeah.
Yes, straightforward. How does it make you feel when you hear people that struggle with the broader shaila of genetic testing, whether not like the preemptive one, but
I don't. I happen to be a very big believer of people doing a genetic test. The question was, what, as a parent of a child with a disability, how does that make me feel about the issues and questions about genetic testing? I happen to believe as a rabbi that I think there's a lot of value in it and that people should do it. Autism is not necessarily have a gene link, so I wouldn't be specifically connected to it. But as I said, I'm not... There are many wonderful people, especially, and there's some people in Yachad also who are wonderful. I don't understand how someone who doesn't have a special needs child could put their life into special needs children. That's an amazing thing. That's awesome. But I'm not an advocate for children with special needs. I'm just a parent of a child with a special need. So I don't have different shitas about whatever. I don't have sensitivities, what words you use, whatever you should use, disabled. It doesn't matter to me. I never get offended by that because I'm not a passionate advocate for people with special needs. I have a son with special needs. I know what he does, what he needs. I know there are other people that need that, and I want to try to, you know, get it to them. And I think many parents are actually much more like that than you might imagine. They don't have this brain space to be advocates. It's amazing if you can be. I just want to make sure Matis has what he needs, and I'd love for his friends to have that too. One more question?
Maybe this is an awkward direct, but ask the Rav about a camper who turns on a light on Shabbos and said that, similar to a goal, you could hint him to shop for lights so that you could go to sleep.
Yeah, so again, exactly what the level of mitzvah observance has to be very often dealt with in a case-by-case situation. And different poskim have different feelings about this. Whether or not a child who has a disability is pater legamre, a child with a disability has... As I recently heard Rav Asher Weiss describe, it's sort of a special deal with the Ribono Shel Olam, that you do the best you can. I care if you do it, but I understand if you always can't. It's fascinating to hear him sort of use that idea. So it's very difficult. And the problem with getting halachic answers on special needs children is that everyone is so different. That you really need, if you're going to bring a shaila, you have to somehow have someone who gets to know that particular individual, to know them and know really what's going on.